Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for that special music. We certainly do appreciate that. Such a blessing for my wife, Brenda, and I to be here today. It's been about 8 years, I think, since we were last in Cincinnati, so it's wonderful to see old friends, and we look forward to meeting new ones. Mr. Myers, we did serve with him for about 8 years over in the La Crosse area when he was pastor over there, and I'm hoping that he had a couple character flaws. I'm hoping he's overcome them. Well, one you know about is his bad jokes. But that may not be so bad. But he kept rooting for the Green Bay Packers over there. And as a good Chicago Bear fan, you know, that's just not right. So I'm hoping that he's growing and overcoming that, but I'm not so sure. And lest I pick on him only, Cincinnati has a football team, right? Oh, there's what I was looking for. Well, it's good to see you all, and now you can yell at Mr. Myers later for asking me to come and speak. I hope that you all did have a very, very rewarding Feast of Tabernacles. My wife and I were in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. I think we had about 720 people there, as I recall, so it was a very nice group. The last day, I was on anointing, and so they had a lot of chairs set up, and I went in about 20 minutes before services, no chairs. All of the family members who weren't able to attend had gotten kicked out of their hotels, and so they were there with their families, and so seating was at a premium, but it was a very nice crowd, and good to see all of them. This year, a few weeks before I left for the feast, I was having a discussion with my assistant, and she was asking a few questions about my beliefs, especially those as they pertain to the fall holy days, since she knew that we were going to be leaving soon. But she asked about them specifically and why I observed them. And at one point in the discussion, after I told her that we were going to Pigeon Forge this year, she remembered we were in Jamaica last year, she said, "Why Pigeon Forge?" And, you know, all of those thoughts go through your head at that time. How am I going to explain this? You know, how to explain the number of sites that we have around the world and all of those things that go through your head. But the answer that came out of my mouth and the one that I led off with was, it's because God is there. She looked at me and smiled and said, "Well, that's an interesting answer. Can you explain that a little bit?" I said, "Well," in a nutshell, what I told her was that I believe that God leaves nothing to chance when it comes to his Sabbath days or his holy days, and that God specifically makes available places for us to meet together. And when that happens, that God is there. She did, after we spoke a little bit more, she did appreciate my answer, even if she doesn't yet truly understand why we keep these days or the Sabbath and don't keep the days that she knows or the ones that the world keeps. Today I want to ask you, have you ever considered the fact that God is here? Why Cincinnati, Ohio? Why did God choose this place? We'll never know exactly what's in God's mind, but we need to understand that God is here. That no matter where we assemble, around the United States, around the world, wherever we assemble as God's people, God is there. He is present. Today I want to ask you a little bit. I want to ask you, have you considered the fact that God is here? And let's as we begin to consider this, I want to turn back to some scriptures that we read just here recently at the feast. Turn back to Leviticus chapter 23. And I want to just briefly discuss, as we set the stage for this sermon today, another group that keeps these fall holy days. They approach them a little differently, but let's look at Leviticus 23. Let's examine how the Jews have looked at this. Let's look at Leviticus 23, verse 39. And again, we just read these, but they're fresh in our mind. Leviticus 23, verse 39, it says, "And also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day shall be a Sabbath. Again, fresh in our minds. Verse 40. Notice in verse 40 it says, "And you shall take you on this first day the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days." So we understand that the ancient Israelites were commanded to build booths to live in during the Feast of Tabernacles. But the Jews interpreted this a little bit differently. They interpreted this as a separate ceremony. See, they take the branches and they weave them together. And then to them, you see, each tree and each branch represents a part of the feast. But again, if we consider how they're approached, this, when you take all of the branches and when you weave them together, they represent to them God being with them everywhere. And again, to the Jews, it's very clear to say that God is the feast. Turn back to Ezekiel chapter 48. You see, this concept of God is the feast is very important for us to understand. And again, not just as we keep the feast, but the Feast of Tabernacles, but all of the feast days of the Lord. Ezekiel 48. Let's just read verse 35. He writes here, Ezekiel 48, verse 35, "It was round about 18,000 measures." Now again, he's talking about here the New Jerusalem. "And the name of the city from that day shall be, the Lord is there." Think about that. The Lord is there. God is present. The name and the description of the city inscribed on the walls all the way around is, the Lord is there. God's presence will be known. He will be among them. He will be their God. What better theme, I think, what better vision in our minds can we have during these next few months as we look forward again to the spring holy days already, that next time when we can start reenacting those festivals of God and go through what His plan is as far as observing those days. As we consider our world now, our world continues in turmoil, and we see all the conflicts and all the crises in the world. We see the era of Israeli and Middle East conflicts that have been going on for eons won't be solved, we understand, until Christ returns. We see the Ebola crisis going on now. We hear of all the famines and the pestilence and the economic challenges, the repression of people, the terrorist activities, all of the evil in this world, we know, will not be solved until Christ returns. And every year we're reminded, as we go through these holy days of God, we're reminded of that. And I hope that that's a responsibility that we take soberly. We've just finished, 2 days ago, the Feast of Tabernacles in the last great day. And I hope that you're still on a spiritual high. I know a lot of my friends, and I've been this way before, is that after we get home from the feast and we get back into the routine, you kind of feel a letdown. You feel kind of lost, down a little bit. I think that happens to many, many of us. But we need to maintain that closeness that we feel to God. And I want to ask you, after this Feast of Tabernacles, as we approach these next several months with no holy days, do you see God more clearly? Do we see God more clearly? We have to understand that wherever we go on the holy days or on the feast days, and yes, even on the Sabbath day, we go where we go because God is there and God has placed His name there. The title of my message today is God is Here. God is here. How much are we focused today, hopefully very sharply focused, on the vision of God's kingdom? We just were thankfully inundated with messages and spent time with God's people for the last 8 days. Hopefully that vision is in the forefront of our mind. right where we can think about it and not let it go away, because that will help us decide how we act for the next 5 months, how we act every day. You see, we know that the kingdom of God is where we're going. It's our vision. It's our goal. But the challenge, obviously, that we have as human beings is that we're easily distracted with those blue sippy cups. Right? The cares of this world. You know, from just getting up and getting going and getting to work and fighting traffic to dealing with the people and all of those things. Things that just take our time. We have to try to remember to keep those in the proper balance while keeping that vision of God's kingdom and where we're going at the forefront. You remember the scripture, we won't turn there, but where there is no vision, the people perish. That could be us, the Church of God. We must keep our vision crisp and clear. But I want to ask you, again, how much are you and I focused on the literal presence of God? How much are we focused on the literal presence of God? What are the lessons that we learned from God's Feast of Tabernacles that I'd ask you to consider? We've just observed the fall holy days. Are we able, that fresh in our minds, are we able, can we see, do we have the ability to see God at all times? Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown Commentary, Volume 1, page 500, says this about the branches we spoke of earlier. It says, the four arboreal branches were not designed for the construction of the booths, but were to be carried into the temple to rejoice before the Lord 7 days. So, again, apparently during the feast, the Jews would bring their branches to the tabernacle and walk around it and walk around the altar every day. And again, this was to show, it says, that God is there every day and therefore involved in everything that was done during the feast. As we plan our lives over the next year, as we meet together on the weekly Sabbath, as we get together for Bible studies, we have to keep in our mind that God is there, that God is present. We have to look at these activities and remember that no matter what, God is here with us and that He is present, and that everything that we do has to be done to His glory and to His honor. Turn back to Exodus 14, please. Let's read some verses here as we continue to develop this concept of God being with us. Exodus 14, verse 10. We know the story here, but we're going to read through this a little bit. Exodus 14, verse 10. It says, and when the Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Verse 11, they say to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? No, not very happy campers at this point, right? Wherefore have you dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Why have you done this to us, Moses? We were perfectly happy where we were. Verse 12. Is this not the word that we did tell you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. Now this is a whole sermon by itself with the reasoning process that they came through. Remember, they just come through the Passover and witnessed, to put it mildly, some pretty dramatic happenings. Right? But when it got to verse 11 here, what's missing? Why the change? You know, we've read in other verses that when they were under the Egyptians, that they served with rigor. It was horrible. It was difficult, and they pleaded with God, send us a deliverer. And now, in verse 11, they're saying, why did you take us away from that? We had it made. What changed? What changed for them? You see, when you get to verse 11, what's missing? The missing element is God. They could see God in the miracles, but they couldn't see him without the miracles. And I think that's important for us to understand. Let's turn down to, go on in verse 29. Exodus 14, verse 29. It says, but the children of Israel had walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. So, again, pretty dramatic, right? I can envision that. I've seen too many shows on TV, you know, the special effects. It's probably better in person. But, right, they're there. They're walking through the Red Sea. Verse 30. And so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore with their own eyes. They didn't read it. They didn't hear about it. They saw this miracle. God saved them. Killed the Egyptians, right? God saved them. They could see the hand of God at work. He had delivered them. And again, at that particular point in time, we're going to, as we read on here, we're going to see to them there was no doubt as to his present, as to his presence. He was there. The trials, the difficulties they would face in taking the entire nation out on foot seemed insignificant as so long as they could see God with them. Let's go on in Exodus 15. Drop down to verse 22. Exodus 15, verse 22. It says, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Starting to get a little thirsty. I remember at the end of Atonement, you know, I'm thinking, whew, 3 days. I'm getting thirsty, right? 3 days, no water. Verse 23. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. They were not just, ooh, that tastes bad, but they would make them sick, right? They were poisonous. It would kill them. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. Verse 24. And the people murmured against Moses. That's not mumbled. That's murmured. That's complained. Remember, you know, that's not just, oh, what are we going to drink? I'm a little thirsty. Hey, Bob, got anything over there to drink? No. They were upset, right? What are we going to drink? They murmured. They complained. So we see, again, just this incredible miracle that had happened just 3 days before, right, at the Red Sea. God separated the water. They walked on dry land. He killed the Egyptians. They saw them wash up on shore. That had just happened 3 days before. They'd forgotten. What God had just done for them just 3 days before didn't last long. They'd forgotten what God had done. Or did they? I don't really think that they had forgotten. But what they couldn't do was they couldn't see God without a current miracle. They needed a current miracle. I've heard some people say before, you might have too, that are going through tough times or something. They say, you know, I really need a Red Sea miracle in my life. Have you ever heard that? I need a Red Sea miracle in my life, they say, so I could know that God is still here and still with me. Jump down to Exodus 16, verse 13. We'll come back to that thought. Exodus 16, verse 13. And so it was that quails came up at evening and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay all around the camp. Verse 14, and when the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a small round substance as fine as frost on the ground. So when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? Now we understand, that's what manna means. What is it, right? for they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "This is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat." Again, a miracle, right? This is what God has given you to eat. So they had another trial, another challenge, not enough to eat. They're starting to murmur again. God says, "Don't worry, I'll take care of you. Here you go. Here's your food." They murmured again. God provided the manna to take care of them. With the manna, all of a sudden, things are good again. Here's a miracle. God's with us. Right? They could see God once again at that time. And God gave them very specific instructions at that point. This is how you're to handle the manna. This is how you're to handle it when it comes to the preparation day before the Sabbath, right? He told them to not keep it overnight. He told them. He was very explicit. But it didn't take long, right, for those two people to have forgot what they were supposed to do when they, as far as gathering a double portion. They had difficulty following the instructions that God had given them. Does that sound familiar? We know what God tells us to do, right? He's been very clear in his instructions for us, but can we see the resemblance that we have here to the Israelites at times? We murmur about things. We have trouble following God's instruction. Turn over to Numbers 11. See, what's interesting as we go through the story, again, you and I are not any different in our track to follow God. We do many of the same things as spiritual Israel. And the lessons, thankfully, are here for us to look at, to examine, to meditate on, and to see that we are like that. And try to then understand what we need to do, what we need to change in our lives. Numbers 11, verse 4. So now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. And so the children of Israel began also wept again. Again, you know, explained better here in the Hebrew, they began to murmur again. They began to complain. And as my mom would put it, she would begin to whine. You know, stop whining. They said, "Who shall give us flesh to eat? We need meat," right? That other stuff, that's all right, but we want meat. And the motto here is nothing wrong with meat. I'm not saying there is. We like that. Most of us like it and enjoy it. But their approach is that they're not happy with what God was feeding them, right? And they said, "We want more. It's not good enough." Verse 5, they said, "Oh, we remember the fish that we had, you know, the blackened tilapia and the deep-fried bluegill and all that stuff. Whatever they had in Egypt," they say, we remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Verse 6. Oh, he says, but now our whole being is dried up. Another version says, our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna. Yuck. You ever open up the refrigerator when you're hungry and you look around and go, "Oh, there's nothing to eat," clunk. Yeah, a lot of us have done that. Or open the pantry and there's nothing to eat in here. And they're obviously, that's kind of the same thing, right? There's food in our pantry. They don't want this manna anymore. There's nothing besides this manna before our eyes. You see their approach, right? You see the attitude. After just a short while, with this manna from God, this daily miracle from God, it wasn't good enough anymore. They wanted another Red Sea miracle. That miracle's getting old, God. Give us something new. See, there's a very human tendency here, brethren, for all of us, for you and me. All of us want evidence that God is with us, that he likes us, that he loves us. And we want to see the hand of God at work. And many times, as we're going to discuss a little bit later, we can see that, obviously. And other times, we don't see it. Or maybe we won't see it. Maybe we don't allow ourselves to see it. You see, many times you and I are looking for a Red Sea miracle rather than looking for those miracles that God does for us every day. Turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 8, please. You see, this human experience that we have, brethren, as we go through it, not completely understanding it at times, and maybe we understand it sometimes, it happens because we're human. God tells us, I am, right? God says, I am here, I'm with you, but you don't see me clearly. He says, Deuteronomy 8, verse 1, it says, all the commandments which I command you this day shall you observe to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore your fathers. Verse 2, and you shall remember all the ways which the Lord your God led you these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble you and to prove you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he humbled you, verse 3, and suffered you to hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, neither did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord does man live. Verse 4, your raiment waxed not old, neither did your foot swell. Now think about that. All the time they walked in the wilderness and walked in the desert, all that time walking and standing, if it were me, if it were a lot of us, our back would start hurting, my knees would hurt, my feet would get tired. Didn't happen, right? Their clothes didn't even wear out. Again, a miracle, but not something that they could see. Verse 5, you shall also consider your heart, that as a man corrects his son, so the Lord your God corrects you. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord your God brings you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land wherein you shall eat bread without scarceness. You shall not lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron, and out of those hills you may dig brass. Verse 10, goes on to say here, when you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. And then notice verse 11, a warning, right? Beware, he says, that you forget not the Lord your God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day. Telling us, brethren, don't take anything for granted. Don't look to make it more clearly. Don't look for the Red Sea miracle and miss the manna in our lives. It's very easy for us all to do. Just think about how many problems would be eliminated if we looked to God every day in the little things. In the little things. How much better, with how much more faith would we? How much more faith would you and I deal with our difficulties if we still look for God, even during the difficulties? And while we're trying to emulate how our Father would live and how Jesus Christ would live, we can sit here and talk about that and have good conversations about that's what we should do. And maybe even come up with a plan. But that human nature comes back and gets us, right? We got a plan, we get out of here, and that first obstacle that comes up in our path, that blue sippy cup that we talked about earlier, all bets are off. And then when we get done with it, we go, I could handle that better. Remember what Job said after he went through his horrible trial? He'd lost everything, right? He'd lost his wife, his children, all of his fortune, and finally ended up sitting on a heap with a piece of pottery scraping the sores. And after all that time, after all that took place, and he finally understood, do you know what God had to say? You remember? He said, "Where were you when I created all of this? You think you're so special, Lot? Where were you when I created this? You think you're so good and smart? But where were you?" And do you remember what Job finally said when God said that to him? He says, "Oh, now I see you, God. I get it, right? You are God. I am not. I see you." Turn back to 1 Kings 19, please. Again, I think we know the story here as well. Elijah had, as we would say, it had enough. You remember the story? God had worked with him for all those years, but he was on the run at this point in 1 Kings 19 for his life from Jezebel. And frankly, he was tired, right? He was exhausted. We've been at that point in our lives, right? We've just had it. We're just worn out. We're tired, and we say, "I don't know if I can do this anymore." 1 Kings 19:4. Elijah is in that situation. He had lost sight of God. 1 Kings 19:4 says, "But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree, and he prayed that he might die." Now, you have to think about this. I don't believe he really wanted to die. He was at that point where he just had it. You know, he could have, if he wanted to die, he could have, when Jezebel said, "I'm going to kill you," he could have just said, "Fine, go ahead, go for it, let's be done. Whatever you do, just do it quickly." But he didn't. Again, he didn't really want to die. But here he runs, and dropping down to verse 4, he says, "It is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's." So again, he's exhausted. He's discouraged. He's depressed. He said, "I don't want to do this anymore." Drop down to verse 9. Verse 9, "And there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said to him, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?'" Think, well, he didn't know. He knew, but he's saying, what's up, Elijah? What are you doing here hiding in a cave? Verse 10. "So he said," Elijah said, "I've been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life." Verse 11. Then God said, "Then go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by in a great strong wind, tore into the mountains and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice." A delicate whispering voice. I can kind of imagine it as like the wind kind of rustling through the leaves. It's a delicate voice. See, God called Elijah. After all the big and dramatic and earth-shaking things that Elijah was looking for happened, all those things, dramatic, we understand that it says here, God wasn't in that thing, in those things. He spoke with a still, small voice. And we know as the story goes on, drop down to verse 15. "Then the Lord said to him, 'Go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, anoint Hazael over the king of Syria. Verse 16, and Jehu the son of Nimshi shall you anoint to be king over Israel, and Elisha the son of Shaphath Abel Meholah shall you anoint to be prophet in your stead. Verse 17, and it shall come to pass that him that escapes the sword of Hazael shall Jehu slay, and him that escapes the sword of Jehu shall Elisha slay. Verse 18, yet, he said, and here's what he says, yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So he's saying, remember what you said, that you're the only one left? Hold that thought, right? What's more, Elijah, he says, I have 7,000 people who have not bowed to Baal. What do you mean that you're the only one left? See, God was there, and he was powerful, and he was doing amazing things. But Elijah had lost sight of that. He had lost sight of the fact that God was there. You can write down Matthew 5, verse 8, and look at it later. It simply says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. I ask you, brethren, why is it at times that you and I sometimes lose sight of God? Why aren't we able to see him as we should at times? Have you ever felt, and I know friends, we've had conversations, they felt that God has left them temporarily. Have you ever felt that way? Why could that? How could that be? Why aren't we able to see him as we should? And I believe that happens at times because my motives, your motives, you know, we're human beings, we struggle. We're not spiritually complete yet. And so we want things through our, in our eyes, how they should be, instead of yielding to the way that God will do them. You see, our thoughts, our motives, our actions, our hurts, all of us in the same boat are not always pure. Jeremiah 17, verse 9, you can again write that down. We know that very clearly because we've read it many times. It says, the heart is deceitful above all things and is desperately wicked. We can allow ourselves, brethren, at times as we drift away from God, you know, we start to rationalize. We start to reason things with our human mind and try to look at God from a very human perspective. And that's where we can get in trouble. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 12, please. Deuteronomy chapter 12. Let's read verses 5 and 6. Deuteronomy 12, verse 5, it says, but you shall seek the place where the Lord your God chooses out of all your tribes to put his name for his dwelling place, and there you shall go. Again, verse 6, and there you shall take your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the heave offerings of your hand, your vowed offerings, your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herds and flocks. My assistant asked me, why Pigeon Forge? Because God was there. God had placed his name there. And I ask again, have you ever thought about that? Again, even in terms of just Sabbath service, we in Milwaukee in the last 5 years, we've been in two different places. And it was kind of a challenge to find an appropriate place that we could afford. And when we finally did, you know, we walk around, remember walking around saying, you know, this is all right, this will do. And a lot of folks didn't really like the place. But I don't believe that God just let that happen by coincidence. I don't think he said, well, I know those guys in Milwaukee, they'll figure it out. And when they do, I'll come and come to where they meet. Why is the home office in Cincinnati, Ohio? Because God is here. God is here. Again, I don't believe God just cares for us by chance. At the feast sometimes, or even on the Sabbath day, remember all the stories we've heard, how hard it is for them to find a place to meet. And they fly by the seat of their pants a lot, because the place they were going to meet, now it's not safe, or whatever's happened. Things happen. But God is always in charge. And He chooses, and that's where He is. And that's where people will need to be. He will decide where that is. It's clear to me, brethren, that at the feast, at the holy days, at the Sabbath day, that God's presence is there. God's presence is here. He is with us. I would like you to consider, just for a moment, as we think about the fact, the title of my sermon again, that God is here. Think about for a moment how many coincidences, if you will, I use that term lightly, have happened that things have gone your way. Or even better yet, how many accidents over the years God has protected you from. Some you don't know about, and others you can remember back and go, I can't believe that car missed us, or whatever. We can think about those things. Some of them we don't know, but just this year, something interesting happened to me. We were driving back from one of our annual Canadian fishing trips, and being typical men, we had 16 hours to go, and we were going to get there, you know. Time's up, we're going. And so we stopped grudgingly because we needed gas, and we run in and get a quick hamburger, except I think they had to go maybe butcher the cow. It was slow. And I'm trying to be patient, you know, but we have 16-hour drive, you know, and so we're waiting, and I'm getting very impatient. Finally, the burger came out. We jumped in the seat, took off, and we got about 3 miles down the road, and there was a significant major accident involving the group of semis that were just behind us before we pulled off. I have goosebumps thinking about that. Why did that blasted hamburger take so long? I think God had a hand in it. I think God had a hand in that. I don't think it was just a coincidence. God was there. No, I'm thankful that we were delayed, or we probably would have been in the middle of that. You know, sometimes, brethren, if we're not careful, you and I can be negative about things, about the things that don't go the way that we think they should go. Have we ever asked ourselves during those times, again, I refer back to the sermonette, thank you for that message, when we get that blue sippy cup, do we ask ourselves, what does God have in mind here? Why is this happening? And I've asked at times, I've asked God, what are you doing with my life? Please help me understand that. Please help me understand where to go from here. Please help me learn as I go through those difficulties, as I go through those corrections. And that's a hard thing to remember. I struggle with that. And I think all of us can at times, brethren. You see, we can't lose sight of God, of the fact that He is in our lives every day. And we can't be continually looking for that Red Sea miracle and forget about the daily manna miracle that is present for us every single day. God's holy days, the Sabbath days, picture some significant and very important events, both in the history of mankind and what is to come for us. What those days picture is what you and I must and do live for. There are lessons for the world, but more importantly, at this time, there are lessons for us. You see, the holy days and the Sabbath days teach us to see God. We read about the start, those the Jews have an understanding that without, or that with those branches that they would weave and that they would wave during the feast, that it is their understanding that God is everywhere and most certainly present with them at the feast. I ask you today, how much more true is that for you and I? Not just the feast, but on the Sabbath day, at Bible studies, every day in our lives. You see, we need to be a people who look for God, because God is here and God is in our lives. Let's close back in Revelation chapter 22. We read these scriptures. We read these on Thursday in Pigeon Forge. But I want to close with them because it's just a joyous thing that it's talking about here. Revelation 22, starting in verse 1. And he showed me a pure river of the water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, there was the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nation. Again, for the well-being of the nations. Verse 3, and there shall be no more curse. Again, brethren, this world is not God's world. This is Satan's world. We function under a curse. And without God, this world is a horrible, horrible place to be. There are terrible things going on. We look so forward to that time that Christ will return. Verse 3 then, going on, it says, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. And they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. Verse 5, and there shall be no night there, and they shall need no candle, neither light of the sun, for the Lord gives them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. The goal of this way of life, brethren, is obviously to see God face to face. And it can't be just a vision, or just a passing vision, I should say. It should be our daily vision, our daily goal. You see, the reality is so awesome. What of that time? We have to have that conviction in our lives that no one can ever change. So don't wonder if God is with us. Know that he is. And your challenge, brethren, and mine over the next few months as we look forward to those spring holy days is to see him more clearly.